ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ पुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्ति। श्रीमद् भगवद गीता इज एक्चुअली एन एसेंस ऑफ उपनिषद्स। द एंटायर उपनिषद्स आर कंपेयर्ड टू अ काउ। भगवद गीता इज द मिल्क ऑफ द काउ। उपनिषद्स फॉर्म द लास्ट पोर्शन ऑफ द वेदास, अंत भाग ऑफ द वेदास, हेंस दे वर कॉल्ड एज वेद अंत। There are four Vedas as we know, Rig, Sama, Yajur and Atharvana. And then each Vedas have four parts, Mantra Bhag, Brahmana Bhag, Aranyaka Bhag and then Upanishads. Mantra Bhag, the sound vibrations, Brahmana and Aranyaka, the ritualistic portions put together is called Veda Purva Bhaga, the beginning portion of the Vedas. The last Upanishad Bhaga is called as Veda Anta Bhaga or Vedanta. In the beginning, each individual is expected to go through the Vedic mantras and rituals in his daily life, as a result of which he attains a certain mental purity. Having attained the mental purity, he qualifies to gain the Jnana, the Upanishads, and through the Jnana from the Upanishads, he realizes the Self. Upanishads declare the Mahavakya, Tat Tvam Asi, that reality, the what? Tat means that. Thou, you are. You are that reality. You are out of ignorance today. Believe yourself to be this limited individual. Upanishads give you knowledge, establishing the connection between you and the divinity. It says you are essentially divine, no matter what you appear to be, a sinner or a saint. From the Vedantic standpoint, there is no sinner. It is only in appearance. So this message of the Upanishads, Tattvamasi, is brought in the 18 chapters of the Gita. First 6 chapters of the Gita talk about you, the individual. In the first 6 chapters, the emphasis is upon Karma Yoga, Jiva Prayatna, the individual's effort, wherein he talks about Karma Yoga and all that. Then, the middle 6 chapters, the emphasis is upon Bhakti Yoga, where he talks about Tat, the Supreme Reality. In the middle 6 chapters, you see the Vishwarupa Darshana chapter and all that coming, where the discussion is upon the reality, the truth, divinity, God. The last 6 chapters, starting from 13 till 18, Jiva, in fact, in the middle 6 chapters, which I said Bhakti Yoga is emphasized, there he emphasizes the importance of the grace of the Lord. In the first 6 chapters, individual effort, Jiva Prayatna. Then in the middle 6 chapters, the grace of the Lord. Ishvara Anugraha. Then the last six chapters, the connection between the Jiva and Paramatma. Jivatma and Paramatma. Jiva and Atma Aikya Sambandha is the discussion in the last six, where Jnana Yoga is given importance. Through Karma Yoga, you remove the bulk of your desires, reduce the quantity of your desires. Through Bhakti Yoga, you improve the quality of your desires. And then through Jnana Yoga, you remove the complete set of desires and you gain the truth that you are Atma. The delusion is completely removed. In the first chapter, which we will be seeing the summary now, which is entitled as the Arjuna Vishada Yoga, Yoga of Arjuna's Despondency. Here, there are only about 47 verses. In fact, strictly speaking, Bhagavad Gita doesn't start from this chapter. Technically, if you take as Lord's sermon, it starts technically from verse number 11, chapter 2. But the backdrop of Bhagavad Gita is important. As you know, the backdrop is the conflict between the Pandavas and the Kauravas. The Kauravas took over the kingdom of the Pandavas unrighteously. And they were banished for 12 years. And 13th year they were supposed to be in exile. And even one of the Pancha Pandavas and their wife should not be identified. They should be in disguise. Even if one of them is identified, then they'll have to continue this 12 years exile again. That was the condition. After fulfilling all these conditions, they came back asking for their kingdom. Duryodhana squarely denied. And he said, even a square inch of land I am not ready to part with, because Yudhishthira was ready to settle even for less. And then when war became inevitable, there was no other choice but to go to war to settle the scores, to establish righteousness. The war was declared. And the Kaurava army had 11 extra armies, 11 battalions. And the Pandava army had 7 battalions. But Lord Krishna was fighting on the side of the Pandava army without any weapons. And they all assembled on the battlefield. And the first chapter of the Gita, interestingly, begins with the verse by Dhritarashtra. Bhagavad Gita, if you take chapter 1 also into consideration, begins with Dhritarashtra's question to his charioteer Sanjaya. Sanjaya was given the power by sage Vyasa to see what was happening on the battlefield, which is miles away from the palace where Dhritarashtra is sitting. Dhritarashtra, the father of Kauravas, who is a blind king, is curious to know what is happening between Kauravas and Pandavas. And Bhagavad Gita starts with this question by Dhritarashtra. It's not a question, he's just asking Sanjaya to report to him. And interestingly, Vyasa starts the text with Dharma. And if you go to the last words of the Bhagavad Gita, it ends with the word Mama, which is the 18th chapter. The first chapter starts with Dharma Kshetre Kuru Kshetre Samaveta Yudhutsavaha Mamaka Pandavashaiva Himakurvata Sanjaya. And the last words of the Gita in the 18th chapter ends with Yatra Yogeshwara Krishnaha Yatra Pato Dhanurdharaha Tatrashi Vijayor Bhuti Dhruvo Nidhir Mater Mama. So the entire Bhagavad Gita is sandwiched between these two words, dharma and mama. Mama dharma. Mama means my. Dharma means nature. What is my essential nature? How do I attain my essential nature? Your essential nature is dharma, atma. Your essential nature is divinity. How do you reach there? By following your dharma, your duty, and purifying yourself, and reaching that atma becomes possible. So, dharma kshetre, kuru kshetre, samaveta yuyotsavaha, mamaka pandavaschaiva, kima kuru vata sanjaya. Dhritarashtra is asking Sanjaya out of his curiosity. Dhritarashtra is blind. Blindness here is about attachment. The attachment of Dhritarashtra to his sons, especially to Duryodhana, actually led to this war. A king who should have taken a neutral stance and seen what is dharma and established the dharma, he failed to do that. As a result of which, they had to go to the battlefield. And he is so curious to know what is happening between his sons and Pandavas. So the fall always happens due to our attachment. The rise always happens through awareness. The individuals need to rise from attachment to awareness. That is spiritual journey. We have fallen because of our attachments. And why do we get attached? We get attached because of our ignorance. Due to our ignorance, we get attached, and as a result of our attachment, we go through sorrow, shoka. So here, the word dharma means righteousness, a higher direction, a reality, peace. That which should have been a dharma kshetra has been converted into a dharma kshetra, kuru kshetra, battlefield. Kuru also means do. The kshetra where they all act. It is called, the Kuru Kshetra was called as Dharma Kshetra because everyone does their duty there. Right? Each one is fighting, performing their duty on the battlefield of Kuru Kshetra. But our life, which should have been Dharma Kshetra, has been turned into a Kuru Kshetra, a battlefield, because of our attachments. So if you do not rise from attachment to state of awareness, you will continue to be agitated in spite of all the other securities through which you try to find that peace. You will not be able to find that peace. So what was happening between Pandavas and Kauravas on the battlefield of Kurukshetra? Sanjaya reports. When Sanjaya reports, he says Duryodhana walked up to his guru. Who's that? Drona. Dronacharya. Dronacharya happens to be the guru of both the Pandavas as well as Kauravas. But Dronacharya was fighting on the side of Kauravas. So Duryodhana walks up to his guru and talks to his guru, but even though he is trying to portray himself as a very humble person, his walk and speech, his body language suggests otherwise. So Duryodhana, who is an aggressively bad person, who thinks and does vicious action, pretends, projects himself to be modest, falsely. He is exposed by his own words. I think it's verse number 10. If you see, verse number 10 of chapter 1, He says, this army of ours is protected by Bhishma, is unlimited. Whereas that army of theirs, protected by Bhima, is limited. Interestingly, the words used by Duryodhana is aparyaptam and paryaptam. Aparyaptam here is translated as unlimited, paryaptam is translated as limited. But aparyaptam and paryaptam also has other meaning. What is that? Aparyaptam means insufficient. Paryaptam means sufficient. Somebody, you asked for water, you had a glass of water, and then you asked for more, and they are pouring into water. And when he is pouring half the glass itself, you feel it's enough. So you say paryaptam. Paryaptam means limit, sufficient. Right? So here if you should actually take that meaning. So just this army of ours, which is protected by no lesser person than Bhishma. Duryodhana schemed and programmed it so beautifully, he managed to gather 11 battalions. Right? But in spite of it, he is saying it is insufficient. A person like Bhishma, a person like Drona, a person like Karna, all the stalwarts are on this earth. And yet he himself is a great warrior, Duryodhana. Yet he says it is insufficient. On the other side, he says it's protected by people like Bhima and it is sufficient. Why is it sufficient? Because dharma is there. Krishna is going to be there only on the side where there is dharma. So in other words, you can try to find security in the secular things. Swell your wealth, swell your relationships, your other paraphernalia. Still, you will find yourself extremely insecure. Like in Bhajagovinda Madhishankara says, for the wealthy, even they try to find security from the children. There are certain politicians, not certain, but many politicians who have security around them. But we know from history that the very securities can kill them. This is what happened to Madhav Indira Gandhi. So you try to find security in many things, but you will still be insecure. This is the message we get from Duryodhana. Your real security comes from knowing your essential nature and following dharma. There is no other way in which you can find your security. Is what Bhajagovindam also says. Bhajagovindam, Bhajagovindam, Govindam Bhajamudamate Samprapte Sannihite Kale Nahi Nahi Rakshati Dukrin Karani. When the appointed time comes, he says, Bhaja Govindam, Bhaja Govindam, Bhaja Govindam. Think of Govinda, think of Govinda, think of Govinda. When the appointed time comes, Samprapte Sannihite Kale Nahi Nahi Rakshati Dukrin Karani. He finds Bhajagovindam, you know, Bhajagovindam started in when Adi Shankara was walking along with his disciples on the banks of Ganges in Varanasi. There he saw an old pundit sitting and trying to memorize the grammar rules. He says, when you've got the text through which you can realize the self, you are getting unnecessarily stuck to the grammar rules. They are important, but not to get stuck there. All the other aspects of life, like wealth, people, everything are important. But there is a time to it. Like you get into a train, you go through various stations, you go through so many things, you eat, you sleep, you play, you talk, everything you go through, but you are actually seated in the train, go to your ultimate destination. Similarly, you play with wealth, you play with people, you play with everything, but never depend on them for security. Your real security can come only upon knowing that your Atma, which is beyond this body, mind and intellect. As long as your identification is with body, mind and intellect, you will continue to be insecure. This is a law. As long as a person is extroverted and trying to find his peace from the external objects and beings, he will not be able to find that. A temporary peace maybe, but not what he is really looking for. So he says, Duryodhana, even though he tries to show that he is brave, through his words he shows that he is feeling insecure. Seeing this weakness in Duryodhana, Bhishma, the commander-in-chief of the Pandava army, takes up his conch and blows the conch to inspire himself and Duryodhana and the entire army, also declaring the war. Now what we need to understand here and note down is, the war is declared by the Kauravas, which means the Pandavas are not war mongers. There is nothing wrong in war when you have tried all the other methods. Sama, Dana, Veda has been tried. After having tried Sama, Dana, Veda, nothing worked. The last solution that you resort to is Danda. So you tried discussion, you tried giving in, you tried politics. Everything you tried. Pandavas tried everything. Firstly, they went and discussed and said, it's okay. And no, he wouldn't agree. Then he said, at least give us 5 villages. Nothing will. Then they tried to divide Karna from the Kauravas, weaken the opposition. If you weaken the opposition, then probably they'll start to avoid the war, because war means there'll be so much of loss. But Karna wouldn't come this side even after knowing that he is the eldest of the Pandavas. We all know the story. So when everything failed, there was no choice but to go to the war. So they went to the war. Now on the battlefield also, the bugle is firstly sounded by the Kaurava chief, commander chief Bhishma. Sakshya says, beware of entrance to a quarrel. Being in beareth that the enemy beware of thee. In the Polonius advice to his son Beatus in the play Hamlet, Shakespeare is giving this advice through Polonius. Series of advices are given. One of them is, beware of entrance to a quarrel. Being in, beareth that the enemy beware of thee. What does it mean? It means you don't start any quarrel, any war. You don't be the person who starts it. You don't be the cause. But if the challenge is thrown upon you, you must accept the challenge. Not run away from it. You must face it and fix it. And all the more being a Kshatriya, you must rise up to the occasion, face it and fix it. Not run away from the battle. So when Bhishma blew his conch, from the Pandava side, Lord Krishna blows the conch, saying, yes, we accept the challenge, we are ready. Lot of us don't understand these things correctly, as a result of which we become passive, saying that we don't want to go to war, we don't want to go to war, we have to be always be looking at peace, peace, peace. Instead of peace, if you continue to be passive, you will be in pieces. So when it is unavoidable, when it is thrusted on you, you should develop that courage and conviction to face it. Now, after the bugles have been blown, everybody is ready to begin the war. At that time, Arjuna tells Lord Krishna, the charioteer. Arjuna is Partha, Lord Krishna is the Partha Sarathi, the charioteer of Partha. He is telling his charioteer, Senayor Bayor Madhye Ratham Sthapayame Achyuta. Oh Achyuta, very interesting word, name of Krishna. What is it called? Achyuta means one who has never fallen. We are ever fallen. He is never fallen. Achyuta. Oh Achyuta, take my chariot and place it in between both the armies. What is to be noticed in this verse? Verse 21. Senayoru bhayor madhye ratam sthapayame Achyuta. What is the word that you need to notice?
My
chariot. My chariot. Lord Krishna just smiled. My. You understand? Your chariot. The problem is ego attacker. However brave, however strong you might be, however well prepared you might be, but if you take your steps egoistically out of attachment, you are bound to lose. What is in this world ours? Even the breath in our body is a tenant. It stays there temporarily and then vacates. Right? Out of stupidity, we say, this is mine. And when the Lord is seated in front of him, he fails to recognize that fact. This is the problem. We should have the attitude of Tera na Mera. Arjuna started by saying, my chariot. When the Lord himself is sitting there, the chariot in which the Lord and Arjuna is seated has a great beautiful symbolism behind it. The symbolism is what? The horses represent our senses. Horses represent our senses. The reins attached to the horses represent the mind. The charioteer, Krishna, the Lord, holding on the reins is the intellect, buddhi. Shuddha buddhi. And the chariot is the body. Arjuna is the individual, jiva, you and me. If the individual who is seated on the chariot has to reach the destination safely, and the journey also needs to be comfortable, then the chariot needs to be directed by the charioteer. If the charioteer is not in command, the horses will go helter-skelter, chariot will break, the individual traveler will be on the roads. This is what is happening to us. Instead of giving our reins in the hands of the Shuddha Buddhi, which is introvertedly identifying with Atma, we have given it in the hands of ego, egoistic desires and egocentric desires, as a result of which the senses have taken over and have ruined our personality. So when he said, take my chariot and place it in between both the armies, Lord Krishna just gave a smile. Why? This smile indicates many things. Smile, first smile is, acha, your chariot? You go to a hotel, you check in, please bring it to my room. Immediately it has become your room. Like I pointed out in the class, each one goes to their particular chair, my chair. This at least is weekly class. Even in a retreat, I don't know what's going to happen after lunchtime. I don't know. We have to roll this now. Let me see what happens. Mechanically, your body goes and sits there. You have established a kind of minus reference to that chair. This is my chair. Mera. You understand? Even Jesus says, thy will be done should be your attitude. Not my will be done. But Arjuna, my. Even though he's on the dharmic side, my came, and Krishna laughed, smiled because of that. And secondly, he smiled because he knows he has got the solution. He can make Arjuna give up that my will be done and take up the right attitude of thy will be done, as a result of which Arjuna will be able to fight this battle and win. That is another reason why he gave that smile. Then Lord wants to educate Krishna, Arjuna, indirectly, not directly. Arjuna has not yet become the Shishya. He has not told Krishna, you are my Guru. So Krishna very interestingly takes the chariot and places in between both the arms, but strategically in front of Bhishma and Drona. Arjuna just wanted to see and do SWOT analysis. Assess strength, weakness, opportunities and threat. Krishna took the chariot and placed it in such a position to understand his own weakness. If Arjuna can overcome this, then he can overcome it. In fact, many of us keep saying the problem is outside. The real problem is not outside, it is inside. The weakness of the heart, the belief system, these are the problems. So he says, he just takes it and plays it and says, Arjuna, Pashya, you wanted to see who all have come to fight, na? Behold, this much only he speaks, he doesn't speak much. O Partha, behold these gurus gathered together. Also, he is indirectly telling, see, Bhishma, who actually gave up the throne for which you fellows are fighting, is finding himself on this battlefield even though he doesn't approve of this battle. He has come to fight, giving up his personal angle and doing his duty. Same thing with Drona, he doesn't approve of this battle. In fact, Drona's favorite student is Arjuna. Right? If you ask Drona personally, he likes Arjuna. The Pandavas are on the righteous side. They like righteousness. They want to be on that side. But their duty, they have to be on the Kauravas. So giving up their personal apple, they are all assembled together to do their duty. O Arjuna, you also rise from your personal thing and come to righteousness. This is the biggest challenge in our life. We get personal. We look at things personally. So he says, if Arjuna can conquer his belief system, he could conquer anything. Deep inside, Arjuna is terribly attached to Bhishma, Drona, all these people. Seeing all these people, what happens to Arjuna? Slowly collapses. When the outside enters you through your senses, if your inside is not strong enough, you suffer. If your inside is strong enough, then you don't suffer. This is what we say. Stress. What is stress? How do you define stress? One of the definitions of stress is when the external pressure is greater than the inner capacity, you are stressed. layman's example that is given is, in a boiling water, you throw egg, it becomes hard. You throw potato, it becomes soft. Potato which is hard otherwise, becomes soft. Egg which is soft and loose otherwise, becomes hard. Situation being same. Pressure coming from outside is same, but the inside is not strengthened, as a result of which you succumb. Arjuna's inside was not strong. Remember, Arjuna is not an ordinary person. We are talking about a person like Arjuna, who was very well educated, is born in a royal family. He had the intelligence. He was well versed in the art of archery. He was considered to be number one in the art of archery. Right? Number one in the art of archery. And he had experience. Well educated, skillful, and experienced. He had won many battles and he had brought a lot of wealth to his country. Hence he was called as Dhananjaya, winner of wealth. So he did not lack experience either. When we hire somebody to our organization, what we do? Education, skill, experience, all these things we see, but we fail to see the inner capabilities. So here, Arjuna had all this, yet he succumbed. Because he had prepared himself outside, he failed to prepare himself inside. So the entire Bhagavad Gita is education that prepares you inside. Remember that. And Arjuna believed that killing good people is sin. He is convinced that he has come to the battlefield to establish righteousness. But how come righteous people are finding themselves on the unrighteous side? And even though I am defending righteous side, if I kill these righteous people who happen to be on the unrighteous side, would it not amount to sin? A lot of us are confused like this. Action per se we take as sin. Certain actions are sinful, isn't it? Because we don't understand the deeper meanings of dharma. Dharma is a little complex, right? So Arjuna also had a belief system. Remember, deep inside, if in your belief you believe that you cannot do it, outside you will definitely not achieve it. Your beliefs will come true. We act in accordance with the truth as we perceive and believe it to be, not what is actually there. Please, those who attended last time, don't answer this. If you have forgotten, then you can also answer. If you have not forgotten, don't answer. What do you see here? You read a sentence which is given on the screen. Carefully read the sentence fully. Right? Have you gone through the sentence? Has the sentence gone through you? Okay. Now, tell me how many letter F you find in this sentence.
Two. Finish first.
You?
Endless.
No, you can't take endless.
Three.
Six. Shweta is not able to do it. She knows.
I remember from last.
You remember from last time. Meenakshi said?
I said two.
Two.
Yeah.
You said?
Three.
Three. How many you find now?
Six. Also get confused with the kids.
When you say off, phonetically how do you say? Oh. Oh. Oh sometimes. Right? So you don't leave that word letter F. Similarly, the beliefs inside filters your perception. You don't see things as they are. That's the problem. You understand? You see something else where there is something else. This is the problem. Inside us, we all have tremendous beliefs. When we were small children only, these beliefs have taken root. If you are a woman born in some village in India 30, 40 years ago, or 50, 60 years ago, you have been brought up with a completely different belief system. If you are a woman born in Delhi, in the city, in the modern age, you are completely different. And if you are a woman born in America, what is restricting you? What is restricting you? Your beliefs. A tiger which is domesticated is afraid. When it is first taken to the jungle, actually other animals get scared of the tiger, but this tiger doesn't know that, right? The tiger needs to be slowly taught, and when the tiger understands its inner capacities and it goes inside the jungle, it's a different animal. Similarly, each one of us have infinite potential within us, but it is restrained by our belief systems. So Arjuna's capabilities were also conditioned. It has limited him. From Shatrubhav, first he had Shatrubhav. Duryodhana and all these people are enemies, they are deadly, unrighteous people. Then he suddenly got Mitrubhav. They are my friends, my relatives. I played games with them when I was a small child. He starts talking like that. Exactly. What you should actually have in life is Sakshibhav. Neither Shatrubhav nor Mitrubhav, but Sakshibhav. This is what Lord Krishna is going to teach. So the stress that Arjuna went through incapacitated him to act. He said, my Gandiva is slipping. Gandiva samsrati asta. From my hand it is slipping. Why? It's sweating. When you are stressed, even if you are sitting in the air conditioned room, you will start sweating. I'm shivering. I'm not able to stand on my knees. My knees have become weak. My hair for standing on its end, I'm having manipulation. This is what Arjuna said. I can't. A person of Arjuna's stature collapses. And he has not really analyzed or diagnosed what the problem is. He still feels the problem is outside. It's wrong to come to this battlefield to fight against good people, his own relatives. On the battlefield, there is no relative business. You understand? On the battlefield, you are the opposition. When you go to your office, your father may be chairman, you are maybe MD. You report to the chairman. You can have discussion. Ultimately, the decision is by the chairman. There you can say father and son relationship. There it's different. So, because of stress, Arjuna was completely incapacitated. And not realizing, not analyzing, diagnosing his problem correctly, he starts justifying his stance. This is the problem. He starts thinking that he knows. Remember, the problem, the biggest challenge in life is not ignorance, but knowing. And Josh Billings says, the trouble with most folks is not so much their ignorance, but they're knowing so many things which ain't so. I know, this is the problem. So he also thought he knows, as a result of which he started justifying his stance using a lot of superstitions. But in and through his words, you could clearly see that he was only doing rajasic renunciation. There are three types of renunciations. What are they? Sattvic renunciation, rajasic renunciation, tamasic renunciation. What is tamasic renunciation? Tamasic renunciation, what is it? Renunciation means giving up. Tamasic renunciation is what? When you do not know the value of the object and give it away, it's called tamasic. Somebody gave you a Mont Blanc pen, you don't know the value of it. You've been writing only in Reynolds pen. Mont Blanc pen somebody gave you on your birthday. You don't like it for some reasons. And you give it away. Then somebody comes and tells you, "Are Baba, what have you done? This is such an expensive pen." Then you will try to get it back. It's called tamasic renunciation. When you do not understand the value. Rajasic renunciation is you know the value, you want it, you have a value for it, but you find a difficulty in achieving it. As a result of which you give it away. It's called rajasic. You know the value, you have a value for it, you want it, you have a difficulty in achieving it, hence you say great is sad. What is it, money? What do people say? Money cannot bring you happiness. Of course, money cannot give you happiness per se. Neither can poverty. That you should understand. If poverty can bring you happiness, fine. Money cannot bring you happiness. Neither can poverty. But money can give you options and choices. To sit in your house and cry or go to another and cry. You understand? Choices there with money. But these people, it's not as if they are not interested in money. There is difficulty. You have to slog, you have to work hard, you have to do a lot of things. It's not easy. Difficulty is there. Therefore, they say, what is there in money? This is rajasic. Arjuna is talking as if he's not interested in this kingdom and all that. Immediately he says, if we get this kingdom, it will be stained with the blood of these people. It's very hot and cold. Which means what? I'm interested provided Bhishma and Drona resign. Then no problem. Then I will fight and he will conquer all these guys. No problem. Whenever there is some difficulty, you try to justify. Why is he doing this? Because he believes action per se is sinful. Isn't it? Therefore, he says, confused and confounded Arjuna says, better to run away from this battle and beg in the forest. Better to leave the battle, resort to inaction. This is his conclusion. To justify his stance, he brings caste system, that, there is so many. He goes everywhere possible. All the more when Krishna is keeping quiet, he gives more reason. And Krishna is keeping quiet like a psychiatrist, like a psychologist rather. He simply allows Arjuna to talk. And when Arjuna becomes silent, only then he will give Gita. Jesus Christ says, don't cast pearls before swine. You can't talk to walls. The person has to become receptive. When he is receptive, only then. So first Krishna is simply listening. In this entire chapter, Krishna is just listening to Arjuna. Arjuna is continuously speaking. And finally he comes to conclusion, I will not fight. With that, this chapter ends. So we'll stop the summary here. And when we come back, we'll do chapter 2 ka summary. I'll be sending you all this by email and we can give you a printout also here. Let's conclude.
Shanti, Shanti, Shanti.